Good morning. You'll actually turn over to Exodus 25. Exodus 25. There's a pattern that once you have been studying the Bible for a while, you'll notice. And no matter where you look in the Bible, you'll start to notice this pattern. And what we're going to be doing is we're going to be examining this pattern from the look of the Israelites around the time that they are at Mount Sinai. But as you start to, and I'm sure you could look around you today and see the pattern, even if we're not looking in the Bible, you're going to be seeing that same pattern when you look around at everyone else. And I want to see if you can maybe pick up on it a little bit. I'm sure it won't take you long as we get talking here. But we're going to look at a comparison of two things. We're going to be focused on the Israelites, but we're going to look at the fall of man in general and see how that is illustrated in the Israelites. So this is ultimately the story of man as a whole. What we are going to see in chapters 25 through 31 is we're actually going to see God's creation replayed in his people. Okay, so we're going to see the days of creation, or at least parts of the days of creation, in these chapters. Then we're going to see the fall of man in chapters 32 and 33. And then we're going to see the restoration of man in chapter 34. So I told you to turn to Exodus 25. So we're going to start looking at the creation. How is the creation played out in Exodus 25? If you'll start reading with me in verse 1 of Exodus 25. Then Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, "Tell the sons of Israel to raise a contribution for me. For every man whose heart moves him, you shall raise my contribution. This is the contribution which you are to raise from them: gold, silver, bronze, blue, purple, and scarlet material, fine linen, goat hair, ram skins dyed red, porpoise skins, acacia wood, oil for lighting, spices for the anointing oil and for the fragrant incense, onyx stones and setting stones for the ephod and for the breastpiece. Let them construct a sanctuary for me, that I may dwell among them, according to all that I am going to show you as the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all its furniture, just so you shall construct it." So he's starting to, in a way, as we see, there's a parallel between creating the heavens and the earth. And especially here in verse 9, notice that he says, "I will give you the pattern." So right now it's formless and void, right? It's just an idea of the tabernacle at this point. But God is going to show them how to form the tabernacle, how to construct it, and then how to fill it with the items that were meant for the worship of God. Then in chapter 25, verse 31, "Then you shall make a lampstand of pure gold. The lampstand and its base and its shaft are to be made of hammered work. Its cups, its bulbs, and its flowers shall be of one piece with it. 6 branches shall go out from its sides, 3 branches of the lampstands from its one side, 3 branches of the lampstand from the other side. 3 cups shall be shaped like almond blossoms in the one branch, and a bulb and flower and 3 cups shaped like almond blossoms in the other branch, and a bulb and a flower, so for 6 branches going out from the lampstand." And he continues on to determine more of this. But God has created a light that is supposed to represent his presence. But he creates a light. And then in chapter 26, if we start in verse 1, "You shall make the tabernacle with 10 curtains of fine twisted linen, and blue and purple and scarlet material. You shall make them with cherubim, the work of a skillful workman. The length of each curtain shall be 28 cubits. The width of each curtain, 4 cubits. All the curtains shall have the same measurements. 5 curtains shall be joined to one another, and the other 5 shall be joined to one another. You shall make loops of blue on the edge of the outermost curtain on the first set, and likewise you shall make them on the edge of the curtain of the outermost in the second set. You shall make 50 loops in the one curtain, 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that is in the second set. The loops shall be opposite each other. You shall make 50 clasps of gold and join the curtains to one another with the clasps so that the tabernacle will be a unit. Then you shall make curtains of goat's hair over a tent over the tabernacle. You shall make 11 curtains in all. The length of each curtain shall be 30 cubits, the width of each curtain 4 cubits. The 11 curtains shall have the same measurements. You shall join 5 curtains by themselves and the other 6 by themselves. And you shall double over the 6th curtain at the front of the tent. You shall make 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that is outermost in the first set, 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that is outermost in the second set. You shall make 50 clasps of bronze and put the clasps into the loops and join the tent together so that it will be a unit. The overlapping part that is left over in the curtains of the tent, the half curtain that is left over, shall lap back over the back of the tabernacle. The cubit on one side and the cubit on the other of what is left over in the length of the curtains of the tent shall lap over the sides of the tabernacle on one side and on the other to cover it. You shall make a covering for the tent of ram skins dyed red and a covering of porpoise skins. So here we see that God is making a separation. At creation, he talked about separating the waters below from the waters above. And here he's showing different areas of the tabernacle that are being set apart one from another. And then if you go down to verse 31, you shall make a veil of blue and purple scarlet material, fine twisted linen. It shall be made with cherubim and the work of a skillful workman. You shall hang it on 4 pillars of acacia overlaid with gold, and their hooks also being of gold on 4 sockets of silver. You shall hang up the veil under the clasps and bring in the ark of the testimony there within the veil. And the veil shall serve for you as a partition between the holy place and the holy of holies. You shall put the mercy seat on the ark of the testimony in the holy of holies. You shall set the table outside the veil and the lampstand opposite the table on the south of the tabernacle toward the south. And you shall put the table on the north side. You shall make a screen for the doorway of the tent of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen, the work of a weaver. You shall make 5 pillars of acacia for the screen and overlay them with gold, their hooks also being of gold, and you shall cast 5 sockets of bronze for them. So he's continuing to make these separations, and he's getting further and further inside of this separation. But he's showing that there is a vast separation between him and the people, just like there was a vast separation between the waters below and the waters above. And then if you turn over to chapter 27, starting in verse 9, what we see here is there are more of these hangings showing different courts and the gates of the courts. And here we start to see that there is a separation of the water and the land. You shall make the court of the tabernacle on the south side. There shall be hangings for the court of fine twisted linen, 100 cubits long for one side. Its pillars shall be 20 with their 20 sockets of bronze, and so on and so forth. And he gives different dimensions for each of the cardinal directions. But here he's having more separation, not just from himself and the people, but even areas of the tabernacle itself. In chapter 28, we start to see that he's giving garments for the priests here in 28. He's making ephods and bands and head coverings for them. He also is showing how to make the ephod with the different stones that are put in it. In chapter 29, he consecrates the priests in order to have them serve him. And so he is bringing living creatures into this creation. that he's made for himself and for his worship. And then we saw the lampstand back in chapter 25. But now in chapter 30, we're going to see a new light being made. Moreover, you shall make an altar as a place for burning incense, and you shall make it of acacia wood. Its length shall be a cubit, its width a cubit, it shall be square, its height shall be 2 cubits. Its horns shall be of 1 piece with it. You shall overlay it with pure gold, its top and its sides all around and its horns, and you shall make a gold molding all around for it. Let's go down to verse 6. You shall put this altar in front of the veil that is near the Ark of the Testimony, in front of the mercy seat that is over the Ark of Testimony, where I will meet with you. Aaron shall burn fragrant incense on it. He shall burn it every morning when he trims the lamps. When Aaron trims the lamps at twilight, he shall burn incense, and there shall be perpetual incense before Yahweh throughout your generations. And then we see that there are more lavers and things made here, but we see that there are greater and lesser lights being made, some of them for different purposes, whether it's to show God's presence or to be able to give them a continual offering. We see these greater and lesser lights being used. And then in chapter 31, Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, "See, I have called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah. I have filled him with the Spirit of God in wisdom, in understanding, in knowledge, and in all kinds of craftsmanship." Verse 6, "Behold, I myself have appointed with him Aholiab, the son of Ahisamach, of the tribe of Dan. And in the hearts of all who are skillful, I have put skill that they may make all that I have commanded you." And so we see that God then is creating men for the purpose of making these items. And we also saw that he created the priests to also do his will. And then in chapter 31, verse 12. Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, "But as for you, speak to the sons of Israel, saying, 'You shall surely observe my Sabbaths, for this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am Yahweh who sanctifies you. Therefore, you are to observe the Sabbath, for it is holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. For whoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among his people. For 6 days work may be done, but on the seventh there is a Sabbath of complete rest, holy to Yahweh. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day shall surely be put to death. So the sons of Israel shall observe the Sabbath to celebrate the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the sons of Israel forever. For in 6 days Yahweh made heaven and earth, but on the seventh he ceased from labor and was refreshed. When he had finished speaking with him upon Mount Sinai, he gave Moses the 2 tablets of the testimony, tablets of stone written by the finger of God." And so after all this, God creates a rest. And notice the connection. 6 days, God created this world and this universe, and then he rested on the seventh. And so we see that as he is setting up his covenant with the people, this Mosaic covenant, that he is recreating his time of creation. The sad thing is, we had to go and do some copying of our own. And here in chapter 32, I want us to remember something here for a moment. Where is Moses during chapters 25 through 31, as we've just been reading? Where is he? He's on Mount Sinai. And he's talking to God. Does anybody remember what that scene looked like? Well, God has been resting on top of this mountain. And Moses has been in the midst of the presence of God for about 40 days. remember that as we start to read, okay? Chapter 32, verse 1. When the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, the people assembled about Aaron and said to him, "Come, make us a God who will go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up from the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." So they're starting to worry. Their emotions get the better of them. But here's the problem. You know exactly where Moses is. He's on top of the mountain in the middle of the presence of God. So Aaron has them take off their jewelry. In verse 4, he took this, that's all the treasure of their jewelry. He took this from their hand and fashioned it with a graving tool and made it into a molten calf. And they said, "This is your God, O Israel, who brought you up from the land of Egypt." And is as if that wasn't enough. Now when Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, "Tomorrow shall be a feast to Yahweh." So the next day they rose early and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and to drink and rose up to play. So they make an idol claiming that that idol is God. Here's the problem. God is right in front of them. "This is your God." Really? I'm pretty sure it's the giant roiling mass of storm clouds above Sinai that was turning the top of the mountain to sapphire, in case you forgot. God is right there. They are at the foot of this mountain, and they're pulling this stunt. Yahweh spoke to Moses, verse 7, "Go down at once. For your people, whom you brought up from the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They have quickly turned aside from the way which I commanded them. They have made for themselves a molten calf and have worshipped it and have sacrificed to it and said, 'This is your God, O Israel, who brought you up from the land of Egypt.'" See, they knew what the right thing to do was. God had told them. Obviously, God is trying to give them a fuller picture with Moses on Mount Sinai, but they already had commandments. They already had things to do. They already had ways to be that they're not following. So then, after God wants to destroy the people, and Moses turns him aside from that plan, verse 19. "It came about as soon as Moses came near the camp that he saw the calf and the dancing, and Moses' anger burned, and he threw the tablets from his hand and shattered them at the foot of the mountain. He took the calf which they had made and burned it with fire, ground it to powder, and scattered it over the surface of the water, and made the sons of Israel drink it. Moses said to Aaron, 'What did this people do to you that you have brought such great sin upon them?'" So Moses is coming to them from the mountain. Can you imagine? We don't know where Moses is. And then as soon as you start doing this, here he comes. It's always the way it happens, right? As soon as you start trying to pull something, your teacher or your parents notice, right? So now the teacher's here. And he's furious. So what does Aaron do? "Moses, you're right. I'm so sorry. We should have destroyed, we shouldn't have even made it in the first place." I wish Aaron did that. Aaron said, "Do not let the anger of my Lord burn. You know the people yourself, that they are prone to evil." Well, clearly you are too, you made it. "For they said to me, 'Make a God for us who will go before us. For this Moses, the man who brought us up from the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him.' I said to them, 'Whoever has any gold, let them tear it off.' So they gave it to me. I threw it in the fire, and out came this calf." How many times have you heard that? "And before I knew it." Really? Before you knew it. Are you sure? Are you really sure? Even thousands of years ago, people have been making the same excuses. Then verse 27. "He said to them, 'Thus says Yahweh, the God of Israel, every man of you, put his sword upon his thigh, and go back and forth from gate to gate in the camp. Kill every man his brother, and every man his friend, and every man his neighbor. So the sons of Levi did as Moses instructed, and about 3,000 men of the people fell that day. Moses said, dedicate yourselves today to Yahweh, for every man has been against his son and against his brother, in order that he may bestow a blessing upon you today. And so there's death. And then here in chapter 33, verse 1, Yahweh spoke to Moses, depart, go up from here, you and the people whom you have brought up from the land of Egypt to the land which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, to your descendants I will give it. I will send an angel before you, and I will drive out the Canaanite, the Amorite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite. Go up to a land flowing with milk and honey, for I will not go up in your midst, because you are an obstinate people, and I might destroy you on the way. And again, Moses turns him away from that plan as well, and he says, fine, I will go with you. But here they're commanded to leave the presence of God. Here is the fall of man once again. It's told that Eve, what did we just read? Eve saw that it was good for food, pleasant to the eyes, and the desire to make one wise. Her emotions got the better of her. And apparently Adam's too, because Adam is standing right there and lets happen. And so they take this fruit and they've turned it into an idol. They had one rule. Humanity had one rule, and we managed to break it and make an idol for ourselves. And here's the thing. As we said before, God's right in front of them. With Adam and Eve, God was walking with them all the time. And it says God came to them. See, they knew what the right thing to do is because Eve said it. Eve said, this is the right thing to do, and she does it anyway. So then God comes. And Adam starts making excuses. Oh, the woman you gave me. Now hold on, that was the serpent. Right? Everyone starts making excuses. And then what happens? Not only do they die spiritually, but they have to kill an animal in order to make skins for themselves, as God decreed. And then they're told to leave Eden. Once again, it's mankind making the same mistake. But the beautiful thing is chapter 34. Chapter 34, we're going to start in verse 10. God said, behold, I'm going to make a covenant. Before all your people, I will perform miracles which have not been produced in all the earth nor among any of the nations. And all the people among you whom you live will see the working of Yahweh, for it is a fearful thing that I'm going to perform with you. Be sure to observe what I am commanding you this day. Behold, I'm going to drive out the Amorite before you, and the Canaanite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite. Watch yourself that you make no covenant with the inhabitants of the land into which you're going, or it will become a snare in your midst. But rather you are to tear down their altars, smash their sacred pillars, and cut down their Asherim, for you shall not worship any other god, for Yahweh, whose name is Jealous, is a jealous God. Otherwise, you might make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, and they would play the harlot with their gods and sacrifice to their gods, and someone might invite you to eat of his sacrifice. And you might take some of his daughters for your sons, and his daughters might play the harlot with their gods and cause your sons also to play the harlot with their gods. You shall make for yourself no molten gods. You shall observe the feast of unleavened bread. For 7 days you are to eat unleavened bread as I commanded you at the appointed time in the month of Abib For in the month of Abib, you came out of Egypt. The first offspring from your womb belongs to me and all your male livestock. The first offspring from cattle and sheep. You shall redeem with a lamb the first offspring from a donkey. If you do not redeem it, you shall break its neck. You shall redeem all the firstborn of your sons. None shall appear before me empty-handed. You shall work 6 days, but on the seventh day you shall rest. Even during plowing time and harvest, you shall rest. You shall celebrate the Feast of Weeks, that is, the first fruits of the wheat harvest, and the Feast of Ingathering at the turn of the year. Three times a year, all your males are to appear before the Lord Yahweh, the God of Israel. I will drive out nations before you and enlarge your borders, and no man shall covet your land when you go up three times a year to appear before Yahweh your God. You shall not offer the blood of my sacrifice with leavened bread, nor is the sacrifice of the feast of Passover to be left until morning. You shall bring the very first of the first fruits of your soil into the house of Yahweh your God. You shall not boil a young goat in its mother's milk. And then Yahweh said to Moses, write down these words, for in accordance with these words, I have made a covenant with you and with Israel. It is by no means the same price for what they owe. This covenant is really nothing. The people, as they have sinned, God can require the blood of all the people. And this is nothing compared to that. And I want you to notice then what happens after he makes this covenant. Verse 29. It came about when Moses was coming down from Mount Sinai, and the two tablets of the testimony were in Moses' hand as he was coming down from the mountain, that Moses did not know that the skin of his face shone because of his speaking with him. So when Aaron and all the sons of Israel saw Moses, behold, the skin of his face shone, and they were afraid to come near him. Moses called to them, and Aaron and all the rulers in the congregation returned to him, and Moses spoke to them. Afterward, all the sons of Israel came near, and he commanded them to do everything that Yahweh had spoken to him on Mount Sinai. When Moses had finished speaking with them, he put a veil over his face. But whenever Moses went in before Yahweh to speak with him, he would take off the veil until he came out. And whenever he came out and spoke to the sons of Israel what he had been commanded, the sons of Israel would see the face of Moses, that the skin of Moses' face shone. So Moses would replace the veil over his face until he went in to speak with him. What we see there, and we see the New Testament talk about this veil that Moses wears somewhat extensively through Paul and his writings. Moses shone with the glory of God. But what's incredible is our mediator is the glory of God. And see, when we look at the covenant that God made with the people here, it's really nothing. It's nothing compared to the price that they were supposed to have paid. And it's the same with us. Are you telling me that to be saved from my sin, I just give my life over to Jesus? It's nowhere close to the same price. The death of the Son of God? And for me to pay that back, all I do is live for Him. Such a small price. And surely you've figured it out at this point. Why are we talking about this? It's just a really cool pattern to see in the Bible? No. This is what we do all the time. No matter what point we're reading in the Bible, no matter what point we're looking at in our own history, even looking at what's going on today, humanity never changes. We always go through this process. I even look at our own history. Once we achieved our independence from England, from the British Empire, what did we do? It took no time at all to double down on oppression, to start doing the very things that we were upset with England for doing to us, through different kinds of taxation, through the way that we were treating each other. We took what God had given us, and we began to squander it, and it took no time at all. After God had created something, right? God allowed it to happen. He allowed the Americans to be victorious in the American Revolution. He created something. And then we decided to take that creation and run with it in the opposite direction from God. And now look where we are today. And it's hard not to feel like we're about the furthest removed from God as you can be. When you look at our socioeconomic status of the citizens of this nation, when you look at the politics of this nation, when you look at the culture of this nation, sometimes we feel the furthest removed from God. But then we can look in here and remember that no matter where we are, no matter what God has created, no matter how far we have fallen, there is a restoration waiting for us if all we do is claim it. And we could do that here in America, if America as a whole wanted to. We could. It's our job to show the people around us that it's possible. We can show them that it's possible because we ought to be living it ourselves. Are we going to stand here and make the same mistakes that Israel and Adam and Eve have been making, and other humans from here, from the beginning of history to now? Are we going to continue to make their mistakes? That while we are here in the presence of God, because we're always in the presence of God, that we're going to decide, I don't want to follow what God told me to do. Are we really going to stand there and make those same mistakes? The great thing is, between what Adam and Eve had and what Israel had, notice that there was a restoration for Adam and Eve. Right? They were given animal skins, and then we know that God was still communicating with humanity. He speaks directly to Cain and to Abel. So they still had God to talk to. They could still understand how they ought to have been living their lives. Israel, they had their restoration by taking this covenant with God. How many times they broke it before God finally said, enough's enough. And now this new restoration that we've been given with Jesus, with God himself. Right, because Jesus is God, isn't he? With God himself, look at what we have access to. Don't squander it like those in history have done. Don't squander it like the Israelites did. It's time for you to break the pattern. Because this is what humanity has been doing over and over and over again. And this is what the Bible's been trying to get us to understand, is that humanity does this over and over and over again. Why does God keep telling us that if it's not possible to break the pattern? Humanity as a whole may not break the pattern, but we can. We can take what God has given us and move forward. And remember what I said, it's a very small price to pay when all is said and done. It's to simply live your life for him. However, in order to get to that point where you can live your life for him, it takes some steps to get to the start of that journey. Hopefully, you've heard the word this morning, and you've heard an invitation. You're hearing one right now, but hopefully, as you've been listening to the lesson, you've been hearing God's invitation calling to you. That you don't make the same mistakes, that you don't follow in Israel's footsteps. And now that you've heard it, believe it. believe that God has a plan for you, that God has given you the means of restoration back to Him, back to the one from whom all life comes. Repent from the path your life is heading right now. That word repent means to turn around or to change your mind. But it literally means to do a 180 and decide that if you're going to live according to God's restoration, that we're going to turn and go toward God. Because any other direction we can go is just away from God. You need to confess who Jesus is in your life. If you're not sure of who Jesus is in your life, let's talk about it. You need to confess who Jesus is in your life. Then you need to be buried in baptism. We've got water right back behind that screen. And then the journey begins. Then the restoration can follow you on a daily basis. And that you can enjoy what restoration with Jesus Christ is really like. However, you've got to take the first step to come up here and take care of all of that. If you already have been baptized, you're also offered an invitation to be restored. God had led them out of Egypt already. God has led you out of the Egypt of your life if you have already given your life to Him, but maybe you're grumbling in the wilderness. Maybe you're standing at the foot of Mount Sinai and not living the way that you ought to. And this invitation is for you as well to come and take advantage of the restoration that God has offered and to take Him up on it and to be one with Him and with His Son. Whichever opportunity applies to you, please take advantage of it as we stand and as we sing.